Spark, stories from advocates for global change, a podcast from the Swiss Young Academy.
Hi, and welcome to the second episode in our series on human rights of the Spark podcast.
Last time we heard about migration law and its connections to more general thoughts on human rights. In this episode, we'll turn to women's rights specifically. Julia, for this you interviewed Erika Schleppi.
Yes, Erika Schleppi is a lawyer and she has been elected last year to the UN Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. I met her in Bern, where she has her office in a charming sandstone building right next to the River Aare. Erika Schleppi has a long career in human rights. First, she worked for an NGO and then the Swiss government, before founding her own consultancy firm. We'll later hear in the interview what made her go independent. So over time, she specialized in the field of women's rights. And the first thing I wanted to know from her was about her motivation for working on this specific topic. Your expertise lies in the field of women's rights and human rights in general. Was there a specific event in your life or a specific motivation that got you into this field?
I was born in Switzerland in a very privileged situation. For me, already in my family, it was clear that social justice is an issue to work for all your life. I remember that my mother was very frustrated when my father went voting and Swiss laws didn't allow women to vote. So she was very frustrated on Sunday mornings when he went to the ballot and she couldn't go with him. And I remember very much that she then engaged in the fighting for women's rights and for voting rights. And this was a strong example for me that it is worthwhile engaging for women's rights and human rights, and that I should do the same. I thought, what could be good to bring this interest in social justice to my professional life? Although I think I wasn't really driven by the idea that I have to save all the individuals around me and to bring them justice. I was much more interested in the political systems, how they work, in the political processes, how they work and how could they be improved to get other interests than just the powerful interests in the game. So this was my motivation in a way to study law. And this, I think, was also motivating me during all my professional career.
Very inspiring, actually. So now, currently, you work as an independent advisor in your consultancy firm. Can you give me an example how your everyday life looks like?
Yes, for many, many years, for two decades already, I'm living from individual assignments, short-term assignments of 2-3 weeks, sometimes 2 months. I'm giving advice on what to do to different actors, mostly in development cooperation contexts or in peace-building contexts. So what I concretely do is giving advice on what to do in the case of developing a justice system and making it accessible to vulnerable groups. I was several times in Bolivia just to give my ideas and to coach people there on how to make the system more accessible to women and to indigenous people. Of course, there are a lot of people who are also thinking, reflecting about the same issues in Bolivia. So I have to work with a lot. I have to interview and to discuss with many people. And together we develop new ideas. We think about the challenges and how they could be overcome. And this is very inspiring for me too. Another example may be I did a review on how to combat violence against women in Tajikistan. There is a lot of action being done on these issues. And I helped the Swiss Development Cooperation Agency on how to support this process, which is ongoing, in a way that is sustainable and in a long term has a long-term impact. Or maybe a third example, just recently I was in Albania advising the Swiss embassy on how to better integrate gender equality and social inclusion issues in their broad portfolio. They're working on water infrastructure, they are working on municipality management, they are working on financial cooperation issues. So they wanted to know from me and from my colleague from Albania how to improve and how to have a better impact on gender equality and social inclusion in the future. So this is a little bit the way how I work. I talk a lot with people, I'm listening to people, I'm working with them, and I'm trying to collect ideas and develop ideas further so that it gets concrete action in their contexts.
So your work sounds very diverse, but also quite challenging. What would you say are the skills that are necessary to navigate this position successfully?
I think you need a sound understanding of the issues at stake. My position is mostly that I know the general topics. I know what is discussed worldwide around gender equality, social inclusion, human rights. And I think this know-how is very important, but it is not sufficient. I'm always working with people from the context that I'm working in. They have to teach me and make me understand what the concrete challenges are. For instance, in Albania, I wouldn't be able to do my advisory work without a sound understanding of the context. And I think this is also a skill you need. You need to be able to quickly understand what the issues at stake are. And you have to read between the lines what people don't tell you. And you have to be able to be coached by somebody who knows. There's always a relationship you need with context-specific people. And I think you have to learn to listen to people. This is a very important skill I need.
You work with a lot of different governments, countries, and stakeholders. And I'm sure there is also sometimes frustration involved because not everything can work. So how do you deal with those challenges?
I would say as an advisor, you always have to be aware of the fact that you are not the actor. You're always giving advice. You are behind the people who are acting. And there is quite a potential of frustration. You think that you have seen something interesting and you would make your partner doing these things. And you have to realize that maybe your client has not the same opinions as you have. There is a kind of frustration which I often have. I can't change the world. But then at the same time, I think it's also very inspiring. You have to convince people. You have to make them believe in what you think what is doable and what should be done. And I think this is in a way also inspiring my own work. Maybe another challenge that I have in this role is that I very much depend on my local colleagues. I'm happy to say that I almost always had so good colleagues that I think that I had an idea of what is going on in my context. If you look at the Tajik example I just said, you know, the traditional gender roles in Tajikistan are very different from ours. If you don't understand what is really happening in the families and what the society is expecting from men and women to do, then you might not be able to give a good advice. So you're depending very much on your local counterparts, that they tell you that they are open enough, that they are able to analyze the problems, the issues at stake. And this is a challenge.
Do you sometimes also have to adapt your approach to fit different cultural perspectives on human rights, maybe?
Yes, of course. This is a very thorny issue. Sometimes me, with my perspective from Switzerland, I don't have the same strategic priorities on how to get gender equality realized. So I have to adapt and I have to listen and to accept that some contexts are not fit to my own ideas on gender. But I think this is always also a question of discussion with the local people. I remember in a case in Pakistan where we were looking at homeschooling for girls. I had to learn that it is really very important to have these homeschooling systems in a moment when they couldn't go out. My first reaction was, this is no solution. Women have to be able to go out and to go to school and have the exchange. And I had to learn that we have to be cautious and you can't put girls in danger just to go to school. So the first and best option in the moment, maybe not in 10 years, but in the moment, is to have a sound homeschooling system based on internet. So you always have to adapt to the context. I think this is very important, without losing sight of your own goal and of your own objective, which is, at the end, realizing gender equality.
Is there a specific achievement of yours that you are especially proud of?
I would say, maybe this sounds a little bit egocentric, but I think what I have achieved is that throughout my long professional career, I was never bored. The same things were often on my plate, but I always learned so many things. And I think this is a big achievement for my professional career. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm quite modest in achievements, in the substance of achievements. I think as an advisor, you always contribute. You do a small contribution in helping people reflect on their own successes. And so it's not my success, it's not my achievement if the intervention in Tajikistan is going well. I would say I'm happy if the others can achieve something.
You mentioned a lot of work in collaboration with, for example, embassies or other like departments of the Swiss government. So how do you explain your decision to not work for the Swiss government, but to have your own consultancy firm?
Looking back to my professional career, I have learned that a variety of perspectives make you work better. I started with academic work. I was an assistant in the field of human rights. I then went to a human rights NGO in Geneva, where I learned how to influence decision-making of governments on human rights. I then went to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to the Federal Department of Foreign Affairs in Switzerland, and learned how to look at human rights policy from the governmental perspective. And then I decided to go out of all these systems because I thought that combining these different perspectives makes you work best. And I think this also helped me to be elected now as a member of the CEDAW committee, because I really understand the various perspectives of the actors, and this helps me understand much more about the substance as well. On the other hand, as I already said, of course, you don't have the power of representing a government. I remember when I was a young professional at the Federal Department of Foreign Affairs, when I went out, I felt that even if I was at a very junior position, I was losing power going out and just being the advisor.
You've been elected on the CEDAW committee. So that's the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. Can you please explain what this committee is and what it does exactly?
This committee has been established by the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. The convention obliges states to respect, protect, and fulfill gender equality in all spheres of life, in political, economic, social, private, family life. And it is focusing not only on legal discrimination, but also on de facto discrimination. So it is not only necessary to adapt all the laws, but to realize gender equality in the countries that have ratified the convention. The CEDAW committee consists of 23 experts from all over the world. The committee reviews state reports coming from state authorities, but also from NGOs in the respective countries. And it also discusses individual complaints, individual cases from these countries. 189 member states are currently part of the convention, and this makes the workload of the committee very high. You can imagine that all 5 years, states have to submit reports to the committee, and the committee has to digest and make recommendations on all these country reports. So this is a very heavy workload for the 23 experts. I'm very happy to be able to contribute in the future to this important work. My mandate will last until end of 28. So I will have 4 years of interesting work before me, and I'm very much looking forward.
So is that besides your job in the consultancy firm, or will you transfer completely to working on the CEDAW committee?
So this will be a part-time job for me. I will continue with my consultancy work in a reduced manner, but I will still be able to take some assignments on. But of course, the work for the CEDAW committee has priority, and I expect that it will be about 50% of my work that I will be dedicating to the CEDAW committee.
So the general aim of gender equality sounds quite broad. Can you explain a bit more on how the CEDAW committee will tackle that?
As I said, the CEDAW committee is reviewing the reports from the countries. It also has an interesting instrument at its disposal. It can do general recommendations on specific topics. And I think this is also very important for gender equality policy worldwide, that there is a standard setting based on the very general terms of the convention. And recently it adopted general recommendations on the topic of violence against women, on women and girls in armed conflicts. It also just most recently adopted a general recommendation on participation in decision making. So it picks up the most important topics from the state reports and makes some general recommendations out of it, which is then a reference for many actors all over the world on how gender equality can be realized in their own contexts. There is also a general recommendation planned to tackle the issue of stereotypes, gender stereotypes. In the convention, there is an obligation for states to fight stereotypes. And I think this is very important to see what that means and how states and civil society organizations could improve on fighting stereotypes, which can be very harmful for the role of women and men worldwide.
What would you consider the current biggest challenges in achieving gender equality?
One of my most important concerns is the backlash on gender equality. Traditionalist and conservative values are coming back to the mainstream. We can see it everywhere in the world. And it is a real challenge to imagine how gender equality will develop in the future. Traditional culture is one thing, but we shouldn't see culture as an immutable thing. Culture is something which is very dynamic. And if you use it just to counter gender equality, this is a strong concern for international standards on gender equality. I would say that the CEDAW Convention and the CEDAW Committee will be coming under increasing pressure because of this nationalist agenda. In addition, we can see that the UN system is struggling with a financial crisis, and this will also hamper the CEDAW Committee from being very effective in its work.
Do you also face these challenges in your current work as a consultant?
I would say that I am lucky to work with many people who are very open to gender equality issues. If I'm concerned about the backlash that I was mentioning, I don't feel it so much in my everyday work, I have to say. I have a strong network of colleagues who are of the same opinion as me. And I think there are still a lot of people around us who are struggling for gender equality all over the world. And I think this is a very important thing to also to counter the backlash, to feel that there is a big network of people around the world who is not fond of this traditionalist approach to gender equality. And I think this is also the good news about it. We are not alone to face these challenges.
The challenge I see as a non-expert with human rights is that we are all individual with unique needs. So how can we create a fair world for all of us humans?
Human rights is much more than individuality. It is a vision of a state which is taking care of its citizens or its residents. And this vision of realizing human rights is much different from the very liberal idea of just fighting the state and keeping freedom for the individuals. So I think even in human rights themselves, there is a strong core of solidarity and social justice. And maybe we can also recall that human rights can also be limited in the public interest. An example is just to limit the freedom of speech when there is a case of hate speech, which is violating the rights of others. So there is a lot of balancing of different interests already in the human rights system. And I think this is a very important instrument also for social justice. Social justice is a broader concept of solidarity, and this is also enshrined in human rights.
That was our interview with Erika Schlappi. Julia, when she talks about gender equality, does that only include the traditional male and female, or does it include others as well?
I asked her that as well, and she said that in the current projects that she's working on, the main focus lies on the binary gender, but she was able to observe a general trend that non-binary genders are becoming more and more relevant. What did you think about the interview?
I found it interesting when she said that culture is not an immutable thing. When cultures change, people change. And once people stop restricting themselves to the rigid walls of traditionalism, of this idea that male and female are not equal, they can form a more inclusive and open society.
So culture can be changed. And in order to change something in the fight for women's rights, it requires a lot of negotiation and conversation. And when talking to Erika, that's really where her passion came out. And you could see how she loves her work. And she aspires to learn something new every day, and I find that very commendable. That concludes it for this episode of the Spark podcast.
In the next interview, we talk about rights for people with disabilities in the context of human rights, with Markus Schaefer, who is a professor at the University of Basel.
We hope you will join us for the next episode.
Goodbye.
Spark. Stories from advocates for global change. A podcast from the Swiss Young Academy. Hosted by Julia Knuchel and Tanis Schindl. Produced by the Podcast Schmiede.